Hey, 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 this is Beer Sessions Radio. For the next few months, we're going on the road in the Empire State. I'm Jimmy Carboni. I've been working with beer for over two decades. Most of my work is in my bar, Jimmy's Number 43, in the East Village, or in the studio at the Heritage Radio Network as the host of Beer Sessions Radio. In my time, I've seen major changes in the craft beverage industry. There's a big movement right now to know where your food comes from and to consume local artisanal products. When I buy kale at the farmer's market, it's easy for me to feel part of this movement. But every time I enjoy a cold beer, I don't always think about where the beer comes from. And since I live in a city of 8 million people, I forget that beer, cider, and spirits are all agricultural products. This is the third episode in a very special series of Beer Sessions Radio. Over the next few months, I'm going to take you out of the studio and into the fields, malting houses, breweries, and distilleries of some of New York's best craft beverage producers. I'm really excited to have you on this journey. In this episode, we will take you near New York State's capital of Albany. That's where lots of important decisions are made that affect how craft beverages can be sold and consumed. One of my favorite decisions that lawmakers have made in the past decade was the passing of the Farm Brewery License, or what I like to call a license to brew. Hey, hey, hey. This is our third episode of On the Road with Beer Sessions Radio. It's July 17th, 2016. It happens to be the 100th anniversary of this great farm here, Indian Ladder Farms. And we're here in Altamont, New York, just outside of Albany. And what's exciting about this journey that we're on, we already went to meet some new primitives in the Hudson Valley, and we went to the edge of the wild in the Catskills. And we're kind of going back in time. We're going to place a historical farm that used to be a real farming area. And this family, the Ten Eikes, have kept it alive for 100 years. There's some stickers out here. No farms, no food. American Farmland Trust. I know this is Stewart's car. Laura Ten Eyck works for American Farmland Trust. What's up, Stuart? How are you, man? We're going live from the minute we get here. Good to see you, man.
You too.
This is Stuart Morris, one of the partners here, Indian Ladder.
How was the drive up?
It was nice, man. Came up the Taconic, went over the Rip Van Winkle Bridge. For me, that was romantic. Columbia County to Greene County.
So what do you think out here? It's pretty crazy.
It's pretty nice, man. It's beautiful.
We're loving it. We're having a huge day, so. Just very thrilled you guys could be here.
What you got on tap today?
We have some Understudy IPA, which is one of our collaborations with Chatham Brewing Company, and with our heritage hops that we have. Love it.
High five, bro. Absolutely. You need to see activity in farm areas, and that's what the Farm Brewery License helps invigorate, this place, which has been forever a place to pick your own, and it's a place where there's a market, but adding the brewery and the cidery, it just gives so much more life and energy, but it's also working energy. They're working the fields. They're growing the hops tomorrow. They're gonna use a combine and harvest some grain. So they're working as farmers, and they also have consumers coming here spending money. There's assets in this farm, like the old barns, which you can use. It's one thing about, like, we went with Jake from the Ground Brewery. He was also in a farm, so they have space. They have room to grow. And you're seeing things like, carefully kept stone walls and activity and people. And that's what the Farm Brewery License is about, is getting these farms to actually have commerce and move forward, like, in the 21st century. Not just get stuck, because some of these farms were just dairy farms. And for a long time, I think there's over 3 million acres of New York State farmland that's empty. We got a lot to learn about. We're pulling in a little dirt road. Yesterday there was a festival. They had bands and a nice old barn, the Indian Ladder Farms. There's the Heidelberg Escarpment. It's this beautiful cliff that's like this geological wonder. There's caves and limestone, and because of it, it keeps you know, the weather patterns here really like balanced. But we're gonna talk a lot about that. And this hop, the thing I'm most excited about is on the right here. There's the hops plants growing, and we haven't seen too much of that in New York State, but I think this might be the biggest hop farm in New York State right now. There's one new aspect of the Indian Ladder Farms. They're growing barley for beer, and we just got her today, and they're harvesting the barley. They got a combine, and they're going to go out in the field. Actually, there's a threat of rain. They didn't want to harvest in the morning because of the dew, but it's right before noon, and we're here with Stuart Morris, who's one of the owners of the Indian Ladder Farms Brewery. So we're going to get out now and talk to him.
Good morning. How you guys doing? Hi, I'm Stuart Morris from Indian Ladder Farmstead Brewery and Cidery, or Cidery and Brewery, and welcome.
And Dietrich, introduce yourself.
Dietrich Gehring, Indian Ladder Farmstead Cidery and Brewery. Welcome to Indian Ladder Farms.
We have an issue.
He just blew a hydraulic line over there, and that truck roaring off was just going up to the shop to get parts to see if we can get that thing rolling again. We had a, it's it's farming. We're going along good. Everything's coming off. We're racing against the weather here. It looks like by 1:30 it's going to be raining. We're trying to get that truck filled and in the barn so we can protect it. So tomorrow morning we can take it up to the seed cleaner, clean it, and dry it. So that's the way things go on the farm.
So the moisture level is perfect right now, but a little rain and then it puts us back a few days, and it really damages the proteins and
color.
It's going to be a problem.
We want nice, if you look out there right now, it's nice pale color. If it rains on it again, it's going to turn a little darker, and so it's, when it malts, it's going to be that color. And you can always make, you know, malt darker, but you can't make it lighter.
So what is it? Is this that barley?
This is a two-row barley. It's something we're new, we're growing. We grew it last year. It's called Synergy.
It's funny, we came here to look at your hop fields, and we're in the grain field instead. It's kind of exciting, but I can see how stressed you guys must be.
A little bit right now. It's like it's always a race, you know, and this is what happens. We thought we were doing pretty well here. We got a barn cleaned out to back it in. We got, you know, I'm looking at the weather on the phone here continuously, watching the storm come. And so, you know, and then we're going great. You know, it's no problem. We're going to get it done.
Yeah, the clouds are coming in fast,
and then all of a sudden there's hydraulic fluid spraying out of the side of the machine. So hopefully we'll get this fixed.
Going back to the origins of the farm brewery license, and thus why you're planting grains and hops.
Well, we started hops, well... We started hops about 25 years ago as home brewers, and you know, just fooling around, and you know, wanted to grow something on the farm. And then we were Lori and I, who's my wife, we were gifted a section of the farm by her father-in-law. And I guess much to her protest to begin with, I decided that I was going to grow, see if 100 hop plants would grow. And you know, fortunately or unfortunately, they did. And so we decided to do it on a commercial scale, and it was about that time we started hearing, you know, rumors of the farm brewery law, and we knew that legislation existed, but it had never really moved very far until, you know, Governor Cuomo came in, and then all of a sudden it was fast-tracked. And at that point we decided, well, let's you know, we have kind of a destination farm here, and it seemed like kind of a, I hate to say no-brainer, but, you know, to have a brewery on the farm. And it was about that time. So, well, if we're going to do it, let's do it really all the way, farm to glass, and let's try barley. And, you know, that proved to be just as difficult as hops. And we're finally at a stage after 5 years where we're actually, you know, getting some crops off the fields, hops and barley.
Talk about this.
So this is what's already been harvested.
And it looks like to me like that's about 3 tons if I had to guess. And so this is what cleans. This isn't cleaned, but this is directly off the combine.
I'm chewing it. It's not like anything like malted. It's not crispy.
No.
It's not a snack food to put at the bar.
So hey, look.
Somebody's here to fix the combine.
Let's hope. Yeah, let's go down and see where Lori's at. She's probably at the tasting room of the brewery, and from there it's a short walk to the hop yard. So.
All right, hey. We're at Indian Ladder Farm with Laura Ten Eyck, and we're going to learn about what it takes to be a multi-generational farm, survive in New York, work with a land trust, and be part of the New York Farm Brewery's license. So, Laura, thanks for having us here.
Thank you.
Beautiful farm.
Thank you. We're standing here next to the historical marker that just got put up in front of Indian Ladder Farms to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the farm. It's our centennial celebration, happened yesterday. And this farm was started by my great-grandfather, whose name was Peter Ten Eyck, in 1916. This is 2016, so that's been 100 years. It's been in my family. My grandfather, great-grandfather rather, came out here and bought 5 small farms and combined them to make one big farm, relatively speaking. The farm's about 300 acres. And he started a herd of Guernsey cattle, about 100 cows. He was really into breeding them for really high quality milk, high butterfat content. And right after he died, my grandfather, also Peter Gansvoort Diedrich Ten Eyck, took over the farm. And unfortunately, just a few years later, the dairy barn caught on fire, started by spontaneous combustion in the hay mow. And unfortunately, the farm family that lived here, their last name was Meacham, one of the kids, who's actually friends with my dad, woke up and smelled smoke and got his father up and everybody, and they ran to the barn and they got all the cows out. But the barn couldn't stop the fire. It's a great big shingled barn, very similar to this one here. And so it was completely destroyed. So my grandfather, instead of going back into dairy, decided to try beef. So he started raising Hereford beef cattle, kept expanding the orchard. Eventually the orchards got into production and they phased out the beef cows. And that's when my father was a kid. And so when my father got to be a teenager, he started to sell apples on the front porch of the was the packing house then. And it got really successful. All kinds of customers started buying apples. It was him and his friend Tom Meacham who was doing it. And they started making a ton of money. And my grandfather said, no more, you can't do it. You're making too much money. And he hired a produce manager to run it. And they had to work for him and be paid by the hour.
Now let's talk more about, you know, the role of keeping this as a farm. So first, we know that very few businesses alone, farms or businesses, survive even a second generation. So what do you attribute to? I mean, I know we can talk about the farm trust, but even the fact that you made it through the first few generations, what kept it going during that time?
Well, I think it's a commitment of each generation of the family not to let the farm go, because there's a lot of challenges and there's always many points at which you could give up or decide it wasn't practical because you're not making a lot of money and it's a lot of work. So, well, let's walk around the farm a little bit. You can see back here, we have this mountain right behind us with this really tall limestone cliff. It's called the Helderberg Escarpment. And oh, you see here we have some kids. These are in our barn school. They're learning how to take care of the chickens. Hi, Sarah. Hi, kids. How you doing?
Got some little chickens.
Kids, you want to talk to us about what you're doing? Did they have chickens in the 1800s?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What do you use their chickens for?
Eggs.
That's right.
I keep saying it. We drive up here and, you know, there's not too much going on farm-wise. And so tell us about the role of the land trust and how you've really been able to keep this, not just going, but thriving. And
yeah, so we're beneath this really spectacular scenery, and there's a state park up there. The view from down here is tremendous. There's limestone cliffs, there's waterfalls. And, you know, this farm has obviously, as I just said, been here for like 100 years. Well, in the past, I don't know, 30 years or so, a lot of people have started moving out here because it's so scenic and it's close to Albany, and they want to live in the country. So they've been buying up farms and farmland and building their houses. And in the 90s, it really kind of got out of control where they were building like giant mansions and as we call them McMansions because they're not really mansions, but they're everywhere. So as you're driving, I'm sure you notice to the farm, you can see that it's houses, 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 and then those houses stop and it becomes a farm. You drive through the farm and on the other side of the farm, it's houses, 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 houses. And so we're under a lot of pressure here. Taxes are high. People want to buy land to build houses. And we didn't want to see that happen. And as long as we're here, we could control things to a certain extent, but we didn't feel 100% confident. So we applied to the state for funding to preserve the farm.
Preserving farms is the role of the American Farmland Trust. Their motto is, no farms, no food. I also like to think of the motto of From the Ground Brewery, no farms, no beer. The role of the American Farmland Trust is to buy the development rights of farmland. That means that the land is protected for farming use. No one can build on the land. Indian Ladder Farm sold their development rights.
We are the first and still the only farm in Albany County to do that. The state has funded protection of over 200 farms throughout the state.
So preserving farms and farmland sounds like a great idea, right? But how does it work, and how does it benefit farmers?
So the way that works is that land basically has more than one value depending on what it's used for. So you take a piece of farmland like this farm, for example, and you have it appraised at its value for highest and best use, which in the industry is real estate development, which is kind of ironic, but true. So that's what you could get the most money for if you sold the land. And then the appraiser assesses the land for its value for agricultural use. So that's a lower value. So the difference between that high value and the lower value is the value of your development rights. So what will happen is a land trust or another entity like the local government or the state government will have the funds to purchase from the farmer those development rights based on its appraised value.
And this is good for farmers and for the future.
And so the farmer gets that chunk of money, which is basically a portion of the equity of their land. And in exchange, an agricultural conservation easement is placed on the land. And what that is a deed restriction saying that whoever owns that land can never develop it or use it for any purpose other than agriculture. And that restriction travels with the deed. So, for example, if my family is all gone and we're not here anymore and someone else owns the land, they're going to be under the same restriction that we're under now. And this will go on and on in a chain forever so that the land never gets built on.
And this program also helps farms stay within families.
So a lot of times a farmer, since farmers don't make a lot of money, they can't afford to just give their farm to their kids. They need to use the value of their farm to fund their retirement because they don't have a retirement plan, okay? So the kids can't afford to buy the farm from their parents, obviously, because the farm's worth a lot of money. So if the parents put an agricultural easement on the farm, sell the development rights, they take the money they get for the development rights, put that in their retirement account. Then they can sell the farm at its restricted value to the younger generation who can afford it because it's going to be a lot cheaper. And then that money goes into their retirement account. They got the full value of the farm, but it doesn't all have to come from the younger farmer.
The conservation easement has been a huge help to keep Indian Ladder Farms going. Something else that has made a big difference for them is the farm brewery license.
It would be illegal for us to make beer here on the farm, even with our own ingredients, without the farm brewery law in place. That's what made all this happen. The crux of it is that you have to use ingredients grown on a farm in New York, whether it's yours or somebody else's. And there's certain percentages of product that you have to use in order to meet the criteria of the law, and that becomes more and more as time goes on and the farms get up to production.
And you know, there is some precedent in the state. Back in 1976, they passed the farm winery license, which really created the growth of New York State winery. So there was a model in place. What took it so long to go from winery to beer and cider?
Well, I think that the craft beer market, the crazy growth of the craft beer market attracted the attention of the state leaders who were looking for economic development opportunities, particularly for agriculture, since it is such a big part of the state's economy. And it just, you know, the wine thing ran its course and became tremendously popular, and they saw the beer, people buying craft beers and all of this interest in craft beers, and it clicked that, you know, why not do the same for hard cider? Why not do the same for beer? And there had actually been some laws on the books already about hard cider that were sort of taking shape, and then the Farm Brewery Act kind of caught up with that, and now the two are sort of moving in parallel, and cider is, you know, even becoming as popular as craft beer, and, you know, maybe even more so eventually.
And let's go see the hops. So we're going to go with Dietrich and Lori to see the hops.
Sure, it's right across the road.
So let's talk about hops. One thing that you guys have done last year, your book, The Hop Growers Handbook, came out.
Yep.
Just tell us that process, you know, why you wrote a book about it, and what you're hoping to teach other people.
Well, okay, so when we decided we wanted to, you know, the farm brewery law was in place and we wanted to start growing hops, and we started doing research on how to do it. You know, being farmers do a lot of research and start to grow new crops all the time. It's not uncommon, but there is a lot to learn. And we found that there really was, there were resources about growing hops in the Northeast, but hops hadn't really been commercially grown here for over 100 years. So there was no, like, big, you know, like we have for dairy, programs of support and training and so on. And we had to rely on a lot of diffuse resources. The University of Vermont had been doing a research project for several years, so they actually had a little bit more content than other places. Cornell actually put their hop yard in after we had started putting our hop yard in. So, you know, there wasn't too much we could learn from them, although they did hire a hop specialist, Steve Miller, and he was learning a lot. And so we just kind of pulled together all the resources we could. We went out west, and we went to Yakima, and we went to the Willamette Valley, and we talked to the growers out there and learned as much as we could. And Chelsea Green Publishing saw the need for it and asked us if we would compile everything that we've learned into a book so we can get all the resources and basic information in one place. And so we worked on that. We were learning trial by error, and we tried to include as much of, you know, our failures in the story so that everybody else could learn from them. I would say, you know, the biggest thing that people need to do is, before they get started, is research the whole process, because there's more to it than just putting them in the ground and then putting up the hop yard. That's the big challenge, and everybody gets really focused on putting up the hop yard because the infrastructure is really expensive and big. But the real stuff starts after your hops are maybe 2 or 3 years old, and you have to harvest and process them. And traditionally, most of that is done like out west, right on the farm. So you have to have equipment in place, and you have to have knowledge, because the quality of the product depends on how well you do that.
So now we're walking from your farm across the highway. I think that Dieter's going to join us too. And
there he is now in his truck. Let's go down this way. So
I got some stones in my shoe.
Okay.
Walking around. This is a real farm setting. The first thing we saw when we drove up yesterday and today are these beautiful, you know, the actual term, you know, they're hop vines, but they're on poles.
Well, they're not actually on the pole, Jimmy. The pole is what's supporting the wire. Okay, so the vines themselves are growing up the string that's hanging from the wire. A long time ago, when they, in New York, they used to grow their hops up actual poles, like you say, like a cut tree, and the hops would climb the tree. And eventually the wire trellis system was invented because people were using up all the trees for hop poles, and they had to import them, you know, on train cars from like hundreds of miles away because they deforested everything. So we have poles, wire strung from the top of poles, and then a string called coir, which is a coconut husk fiber, coming down from the top of the trellis, anchored in the ground, and the vine climbs the string.
Hey, Dieter, how are you, man?
Very good.
We're coming up. So now's our time. We got a little backstory on the farm, and we want to talk more about, you know, what it's like growing hops. Some of the history. Let's go back to the history. You were telling us about 19th century, from hop dances to harvesting.
Oh, you mean the hop? You know, let's all go to the hop. That was part of the big parties that they would have after hop picking and stuff. And so they'd have these big dances with bands, and a lot of people would meet their, you know, future husbands and wives. I mean, it was such a big thing in Madison County that some of the big hop farmers out there would actually, they would charter train cars, and they would hand out flyers in Brooklyn and Manhattan, you know, to come out and pick, because they needed like this massive crew of people for a very short period of time. I mean, the whole hop picking season is between 4 and 6 weeks. And the rest of the year, you just don't need that many people. I mean, now we're, you know, a little more mechanized, so we don't need that. But, you know, a single hop plant can take one person, you know, all day to pick, you know. So it's, if you have like an acre is 1,000 plants. So, you know, an average farm back then was probably around 40 acres. So you can imagine trying to bring in that crop, you needed a mass of people. Now, for the most part, we do it with machines, so it's a lot easier. But, you know, back in 1880, the New York State was the king of hops. You know, people made a lot of money off of it. It was, you know, 4 million pounds at 40,000 acres in the state.
What about the naysayers? We're talking about the farm brewery license. There's a lot of brewers that say, oh, you can't, you know, really buy New York, you know, malted grain. You can't really buy New York hops. But I disagree, and tell us how you feel.
Well, I don't know. There's always naysayers and everything. I've been told in everything that we've absolutely done, oh, you can never do that. You can't do that for this or whatever reason. People would say you can't grow apples in New York State, but that's obviously not true. I mean, it's basically about the knowledge that you have and what you bring to it. I mean, you're walking down through a hop yard right now. You can see hop cones growing. It obviously can be done. And the same with barley. I mean, we can grow barley in this state, but it's about knowledge and what, you know, when to pick it, you know, when to plant it, when do you need to spray it, you know, do you need to spray it, you know. So we need to know these things. We need to know what varieties to grow. When we first started 5 years ago, there was nothing. But now, you know, places like Cornell have stepped up. You know, other people like myself have jumped into the game. So we do have, you know, more knowledge than we had just a few years ago.
So right now we're in the middle of your hop. What are these called? Hop fields? What is the term for this?
Generally, they're called a hop yard. And this is a 1 acre yard we're walking through right now. On the right-hand side, this is a varied row, so we walk through some Cascade. We're now walking through some Chinook. On the left, this entire row here is Brewer's Gold, which is kind of an interesting older variety. Hops are absolutely amazing. By the solstice, if you've done everything correctly, they should hit the wire. And that's a pretty short period of time for a plant to grow 18 feet. And then they start putting out sidearms, and these are the sidearms here you can see coming off the main stalk. And the sidearms is where all the hop cones are going to be.
In some weird ways, it seems like growing grapes.
There are a lot of similarities to growing grapes and apples. And you'll find that a lot of people, especially in New York State, you'll find that the people that are serious farmers that are doing it are generally apple or grape growers as well.
They're beautiful. Dieter just handed me a hop, and tell me what I'm smelling
This is one of our early varietals. This is the earliest varietal we have in our hop yard, which is Centennial, sometimes referred to as Super Cascade. And if you break it open, I mean, this is a very, very young hop. It's not even close to maturity, but you can already see by breaking it open, you can see the lupulin glands in there, that yellow in there. When this is mature, this cone will probably be, well, 3 times the size it currently is, and this will turn a much more orange color and be, I mean, you can smell that piney smell already in this, but this will be super pungent by the time it's ready to pick.
What is harvesting hops akin to? Is it like harvesting berries in terms of like the fragility of it?
hops are very unique in the way they're harvested. I don't know of really any other plant that's really harvested the way hops are. I mean, if again, you're looking at this plant, right? It's 18 feet high. We're going along and we chop it off at about chest high, and then we chop it off at the top up at the cable, and we take that whole plant and we load it in a truck and we take it and we can go down. You can see our hop picker. We run it through this machine that has these metal fingers on drums on it, and it pulls all the leaves and cones off and then sorts them. And then the cones are all are separated, and that's what we put in the dryer, and that's what we want are the cones off of there. When we first started out, you start with a hop picking party, right? And everybody's really excited. They're all homebrewers and they're really into it. And 100 people show up, and you have food and you have beer, and everybody picks your crop. In the second year, not so many people come because hop picking is itchy and, you know, it's work and stuff. And by the third year, nobody answers the phone when you call. So you need a machine. And so we've gone back to that old-timey thing. You know, it's like we now pick for 10 other farms. And because we are a regional hop picking and processing facility now, it's allowed those farms to expand a little bit. So farms that were a half acre now can put in another half acre, and they can think towards putting in maybe another acre. It becomes more cost effective because you actually have that ability to, you know, pick and dry.
Dieter, looks like the rain's coming in, man.
The rain is coming in. We have our love-hate relationship with the rain. It never rains at the right time. We need the rain. We need a fair amount of it. And right now we're really dry and we need the rain, but of course it's coming when we're trying to harvest barley, so. And we've got a broken combine down the road, and now this is gonna set us back 2 days. But on the flip side of that, the hops need rain, so it's good for them.
And
it's good for the pumpkins, and it's good for the apple trees. So it's a constant. Farmers are never quite happy. There's always something that's bugging us, and it usually has to do with the weather.
Our next stop is with some friends of Indian Lauda Farms. They're about 25 miles southwest of the farm.
We're at the Kara Institute in Rensselaerville, New York. It's a pretty special place. It's been here a long time. It used to be known as the Rensselaer Institute. Right now, it's a nonprofit that hosts different conferences and a lot of focus on small business and upstate issues. And they become a leader in thinking about how to get New York State, really the brewing industry growing, implementing the farm brewery license. They hosted several years ago a small grains workshop where a number of brewers that are our friends, like Evan Watson, first came and got inspired about brewing. So we pulled up and there was there's deer in the yard, and it's bucolic and beautiful. And this is one of the quietest, most beautiful towns in New York State. And that's part of the journey that we're taking with On the Road with Beer Sessions Radio, because the more and more people are appreciating, you know, the beauty of this part of the state. So we're happy to be here. We're going to go in and talk. They have a brewery on site, and we're going to talk about some of the projects they're doing.
Rebecca Platel met up with us outside at the Cary Institute to show us around. Rebecca is the program manager for the Sustainable Communities Program at the Cary Institute. The Helderberg Brewery and Incubator are part of that program.
My biggest surprise when we came into town was just how beautiful and historic the Main Street is. And that's a key factor of so many places in New York. Mm-hmm. And what role are you guys doing that? You're really caring about small towns and small businesses at the Cary Institute.
Yeah, I mean, being here and growing up here and sort of having this organization here and you know, seeing kind of the ebb and flow of the community and just, you know, what's important and, you know, how can we contribute to that, and both providing jobs but also through our programming, what can we do to promote it not only here but in any other small community. It's challenging, definitely. It's a lot of work, definitely work, but It's fun.
One thing that we're learning on our journey on the road with Beer Sessions Radio is that each region is so different. And we're in the Catskills where everything seems new. And here it's like these historical buildings. I feel like that people are ready to come up and take back these old towns.
Yeah, so this Rensselaerville sort of has a unique history and why the way, you know, why it is the way it is, and also its linkage to the Carey Institute and the community, the sort of the founding members of the community and what they did historically. And you kind of look at that and you're like, wow, it's so impressive. Like, what are we doing? Like, what are we doing, you know, comparatively? And so the hamlet is actually on the National and State Register of Historic Places. So, you know, there's some kind of concern for what happens to the buildings and who's buying them and or who's selling them and, you know, who's occupying them or not. But yeah, we're kind of in a weird little place though at the same time. There's not many other places like Rensselaerville, I don't think. Especially, you know, in the hill towns where we are in Albany County, we're kind of a unique place, but that comes with sort of could also be sort of the stepchild of other places too.
For sure, but you're not that far from Albany, so you know this is a great place, and we love being here. Let's walk over to the brewery. So let's take it back to what got you guys involved in the craft beer scene in New York, and how you guys ended up having a brewery. So tell us about a few years ago. You hosted a little conference with a small grains workshop. Which way should we go?
We should go up that way, and we'll walk.
Beautiful grounds, and we're gonna walk.
Through nice the fields with the deer. 2013, I had no idea what I was doing. The farm brewery legislation had just passed, and I was like, this is really interesting. How are they going to get all these crops? No one's growing anything. And the attention was really focused on hops. And finally, I was talking to someone at Cooperative Extension, and they, I don't know, maybe they were annoyed at me for, like, being persistent. They were like, you know, no one's doing anything on small grains. Why don't you do something on small grains? And I'm like, okay, yeah. So we put a workshop together, and we put it together, and we had 120 people show up, ranging from, you know, growers, intermediary people who were sort of interested more generally, brewers, and it was just like a really sort of wow moment, like, okay, there's a lot of interest in this, and, you know, we should pursue it.
One thing with the farm brewery license, there's so many new breweries in New York State. Do you feel like you guys are going to have a role in training and educating these new startups? Because they're businesses, too. Mm-hmm. An important part of the upstate economy.
Yeah, I mean, we try to balance both workshops for production, for farmers, for, you know, sort of more tangible, skills-based stuff for brewers who maybe aren't trained and maybe they don't have time to get training, but they, you know, they have a really specific need for knowledge on yeast or water quality or, you know, sensory evaluation. So we're trying to build those workshops, but also, you know, incorporate workshops on, like you're saying, small business operation. How can you access grants? How good is your business plan? Are you, you know, are you really sure you know what you're doing? You know, maybe you know how to brew beer, but maybe you're not totally sure of certain elements of running a business.
Look at this beautiful view. Yep. Everything here is views. There's like hills, there's valleys. This is the most beautiful place in New York State.
You've got an awesome view of the Catskills to the south. To our immediate east, I suppose, is Lake Myosotis and the Hike Preserve, which is a 2,000-acre nature nonprofit organization. And it ultimately all used to be owned by the same family. And at some point there was sort of a division of who owned what, but the Carey Institute property and the preserve were all sort of together. And so hypothetically, if you had been sitting on the porch of Stonecrop up there, you would have been able to look right over to the lake. All of these trees were not really there.
Let's walk to the brewery, come on. Right. And tell us about why you guys started a brewery. Again.
Well, okay. You know, I think as we were getting into the small grains and look at, and hops and it was kind of like, we should do this here. Like, why is everyone else doing it? And, you know, what can we do here? So we just sort of started going down this path, and we took over this little cottage up here. And we again got some, you know, all on the premise that we wanted to be able to bring people in and help them improve their beer or learn how to brew beer or simply just, you know, be able to work with local ingredients on a small scale. Whereas if you're a large brewery, you can't really do that consistently. We use all New York State grain and all New York State hops. Occasionally, if it's a darker beer, we can't find the malt we want, we use out of state. But it feels like it's like sacrilegious. Like we can't put it in there. But
there's a little sign. It's about the size of an 8x10. It says Helderberg Brewery down this way. So we're going to walk down the steps. So this is a very little place, a very little cottage, but with a real big mission.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. And, you know, and there's beer. At the end of the day, there's beer. Well, let's go inside, though.
Let's go in, yeah. Can we drink beer for breakfast?
I think so. I mean, there's a porter that's like, you know, it's got lots of malt in it.
Helderberg Brewery at the Carey Institute, Rensselaerville, New York. 100% New York State grown hops and grain brewed on our campus. Wow. Here we go. It's a nice space here.
I'm Greg Hostesch. I've been a brewer here at Helderberg Brewery.
I'm Greg Back. I am the project assistant for the Helderberg Brewery Incubator.
I'm Rebecca Platel. I am the program manager for the Sustainable Communities Program at the Carey Institute, and the Helderberg Brewery and Incubator are a part of the Sustainable Communities Program.
And, yeah, man. Well, it's nice being here. I like this little brewery. You guys want to show us around? Why don't we look at the brewery first?
We're very micro nano. We have a 3-kettle, 2/3 barrel system. As you can see, we're quite small, but I've been pretty well keeping up with our demand after our opening and trying to continue with producing the beers that I like to drink.
When did you start brewing?
I started probably in the mid-70s when Jimmy Carter declared that home brewing was legal in the U.S. I made my first beer. At the time, I wasn't really drinking very much beer because the beer that was available was not really very good. And as I say, I made that beer, and some of the people that did drink beer at the time liked it fairly well. And when Becca decided that the Sustainable Communities Program, that we have to keep young people in the hill towns, and how are we going to do that? And well, we don't have very much industry, so maybe there's agriculture and... what can we grow here? Well, we used to grow hops a lot in this area, and why can't we still do that? And I guess it was the notion that, well, everybody likes beer. Finally, we, after it seemed like almost forever, we got our brewery together and got licensed and started actually making beer. And now I can make beer a lot more often and not have to drink it all myself, which should be good for my waistline. I'm hoping at any rate.
So I work as the sales director and kind of bar manager and barkeeper at Rare Form Brewing Company in Troy. And that was kind of my jumping off point into the industry. And I realized that a lot of my personal belief and goal, you know, I believe in environmental sustainability, I believe in local business, I believe in bringing back agriculture, and all of those are really encompassed by farm brewing law and what we're doing here at the Carey Institute, and also what we're doing at Rare Form because we're purchasing local ingredients and we're working with farmers and we're walking the fields and we're seeing exactly what's going on. And that's a unique opportunity that we have upstate New York that isn't really happening in all parts of the country.
And one of our workshops... one of the distillers said that he would guarantee inconsistency in his products. Every one is going to be different, so you've got to taste all of them, you know, to make sure that you get every flavor that you'd like. And I think that is something that craft beer drinkers kind of like to have. But geez, this was a really good beer. Well, so is this one, but it's somewhat different.
Hey guys, this has been a really great route here at the Cary Institute. The Heidelberg Brewery, you guys have been really awesome leaders in encouraging people to use New York State grains and teaching them, you know, how to do small batches. And yeah, it's great. We're up here in Albany County, which is a great historical place, Rensselaerville, and we'll be on the road with Beer Sessions Radio. All right. What would a trip to the capital region of New York State be without going to the capital? Next stop, Albany. So here we are at the state capital in Albany. We came up to Albany County to talk about the New York Farm Brewery License and all the great changes that have happened in New York State agriculture. And we were talking about farm trust laws and everything. But number one, New York State's doing a great job thinking about ways to get farms and agriculture communities, you know, more vibrant again. And we're happy to be here right in front of the state capitol in Albany. All right. We're up here in Albany County. We had a long day. We went to Indian Ladder Farms. We're in Hop Field, or Hop Yard, as they say, Barley Field. We had a rainstorm. The combine broke. We had great lunch at Indian Ladder Farm. Talked about, you know, land trusts and farm brewery licenses. But we're kind of wrapping it up here. We came into Albany, the Albany Pump Station, C.H. Evans. And there's nothing quite like it's fun going to breweries, but I'm still a big fan of kind of the urban restaurant bar setting. Creature of comforts and a lot of big tap systems. So we'll find our friends. There's Lori over there from, and Dieter. Got the whole crew here, Indian Ladder. So we're just a walking radio show.
Welcome to CH Evans.
Good to see you, man. Dieter.
Long time.
It's been a long time.
Where have you been?
My name is Scott Veltman. I'm the head brewer here at CH Evans Brewing Company here in Albany, New York.
Hey, man.
How's it going?
Good to see you, man.
Always
thanks
a pleasure.
For having us.
No problem. Welcome.
So what is this place called? Albany Pump House?
This is the CH Evans Brewing Company at the Albany Pump Station. Located right down here in Quackenbush Square, right here in Albany.
This is great. What is this, a historical building?
Yeah, it was originally the old pumping station for the city of Albany. So this place used to pump the water out of the Hudson and make it disperse throughout the whole city for water purposes.
Everybody knows where this place is.
Everyone knows this place. So old.
Hey, why don't you give us a tour around the brewery?
Hold on. I'm going to shut this down real quick.
Okay. So the brewery here, like you can see it, it's in a glass case. Again, what I love about these kind of like brew pub.
And as you can smell, you know, I was brewing today.
It smells good.
Right?
What do you smell? I smell like bread.
You smell bread? I smell dankness from the hops, a little grassiness, kind of like hay in the way as well.
And how'd you start brewing?
Well, I started brewing at Brewery Umma Gang back in 2010. And was there for a few years, and then in February of 2015, I came here because Ryan needed an assistant brewer. So it's like, oh, it'd be nice to get away from a bigger company and go somewhere a little bit smaller where I can have the freedom to brew what I like.
So you're living, we met you yesterday at Indian Ladder Farms. So you live in that area, you know, have you been helping out at their brewery as well?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Because I literally have to drive by that farm every single day. So if I see Dieter's car there, or if I see Stewart's car there, I have to stop in. But right before they launched, we did a collaboration beer for Indian Ladder. It was called Dr. Paul Matthews. It was named after hop geneticist Mr. Paul Matthews himself. He developed this hop called Eureka. And the best way to describe it, it's very, very dank, and it's very minty. And it was a very aromatic hop, and we just loved how that turned out. And one night it was like, oh, we have this tank that we can bring to your brewery, and we can brew to your place, and then we can truck it over to the farm that night and then start fermenting it. Like, all right, that's cool. So we get a hold of Dieter. It's like, okay, we can do it this day, but it'd have to be at night, so that way we can put the tank right outside the front door and take all our brewery hose from our brewery itself and pump it right to that tank. And yeah, Dieter shows up with a bunch of his Synergy malt, which they just harvested more of it yesterday, some of his hops, and then he brought those Eurekas. So I thought they were playing a sick joke on us. It's like, hey, Dieter, did you forget something? He's like, what are you talking about? It's like, did you forget your fermenter? we looked around, it's like, oh, yeah, it's back at the farm. I got to go get it. But that was a fun night, and that beer turned out phenomenal.
You're not a farm brewery license brewery.
No, we're not a farm brewery. Because we will use some malt from Indian Ladder, or actually Pioneer Malting is another one that we would use out of Rochester. But mostly we just stick with Canadian malt and some other U.S. malts from like Colorado area, a little bit from Wisconsin.
Tell us about how the New York ingredients are being used and maybe the potential you see of the New York ingredients.
Yeah, well, right now, it's been like a few years since the hop industry has really started booming around here, and same with the malt. So it's slightly getting better, which is really nice because, you know, 3-4 years ago, you're trying to get New York State malt, and it was not great. So people were like, it's going to be tough for everyone to be a part of trying to support all these New York farmers and try to get all their malts and all their hops out there. And then the quality just started skyrocketing in the past couple of years, which is phenomenal, which I love. Because nowadays, I give a shout to Indian Ladder or Hop Holler down in Steventown. Say, hey, what kind of hops do you have? Let's take a look at them, see what we can use them in. And it's starting to get that way now, which is awesome. Something
so
we've always
done. You are using New York ingredients, but only partially.
Only partially. Once a year, we do a 100% New York State beer. We'll just use New York State malts. We'll use some hops from my house up in Knox. Get a hold of Dieter, get some of his hops, get some of the hops from Hop Holler. Okay, so right now we're in the hot side, aka the brewery itself. Yeah, so now we're gonna walk you guys up to the fermentation cellar and where the bright tanks are. So it was a little louder. It was loud in the brewery.
And then, so do you think you could one day be using all New York State ingredients, you know, down the road?
Oh, absolutely. If the farmers can keep up with that demand, we could do that. We don't have a New York farm brewery license because we just can't. We produce a little bit more than some smaller breweries would do, where they have to use New York grain and New York products, where it'd be really tough for us to source out all this grain and take away from the smaller guys. And, you know, once the market happens and we get more grain and more hops from New York State, then. But the only another problem is the pricing is way too high as well. It's very expensive because, you know, they're small farmers, you know. And in order to do that, you have to, you know, mark it up a little bit. Like a couple years ago, I remember someone out in Central New York was selling Cascades for, I think it was like $18 a pound. Usually, like it's between like $6 to $9 a pound. So it was quite the markup. And it's like, oh, you know, if we want to buy, you know, like 200 pounds of it, that's a big chunk of change out of my pocket.
When did you guys get your license here?
Back in '97.
Yeah, so that was before there was a craft, you know, farm brewery license. But also, in their defense, they're being honest because it's easier to get a farm brewery license, and at this stage, some people are getting both. They're getting a microbrewery license and a farm brewery license. So, you know, we hope to see more New York State production ingredients, and we're all behind. That's part of the show is talking about the farm brewery license. Yeah. So,
So hopefully. Hopefully in the next couple of years we can get a lot more farmers out there and help producing and let the mid-sized brew pubs, get into that.
This is one of my favorite breweries I've been in. I mean, just the space, it's a historical building, it's kind of what you expect. Got creative, you put the fermenting tanks up here above the bar.
Oh yeah.
And it's beautiful, old brick. And I think that we have a lot more to think about in terms of the New York Farm Brewery license, the use of farmland trust to preserve farms. And, you know, we all have an obligation. One, if we want our beer to be better, we probably want to have more local ingredients and local brewers. And two, if we care about farming in New York State, which is a big agricultural state, we have to get behind supporting these farms. And if it means being able to grow hops and other value-added products, and whether they're able to also make cider or beer, we have to all be behind that. And I think that's a big lesson that we learned from this episode of the License to Brew on the Road with Beer Sessions Radio.
Awesome. Good work. Hey, give me a high five. High five. Slap hands.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to another episode of Beer Sessions Radio on the road. If you want to visit the Capital Region and the craft beverage makers profiled in this radio special, check out the Escape Maker package on heritageradionetwork.org. Special thanks to the craft beverage producers we met in this episode: Dietrich Gehring, Stuart Morris, and Laura Teneich of Indian Ladder Farms, Rebecca Platel, Greg Back, and Greg Hostish of Helderberg Brewery and the Carey Institute, and Scott Veltman of C.H. Evans at the Albany Pump Station. This episode was hosted by me, Jimmy Carboni. It was produced and recorded by Caitlin Pierce with help from Harry Huggins. The episode was engineered, mixed, and scored by David Tadashore with editorial oversight by Aaron Fairbanks, all for the Heritage Radio Network. Thanks for listening.